That smooth Owen Wilson jazz.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode number 106 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast. We are now 2 weeks into year three, and I'm excited.
Me too.
Yeah, you know, when we started this podcast, I thought we'd be doing it for about a year. I wasn't sure how long it would go, just because I figured schedules would get in the way. And man, yeah, weekly, every week, every Tuesday night. You guys are getting a new podcast, and I want to say hello to all our new listeners who maybe tuned in for this week or last week for the first time. If you don't mind, if you could head over to iTunes and give us like one of those nice 5-star ratings, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Maybe talk about how smooth and jazz-like Dave's voice sounds.
Yeah. Smooth like Owen Wilson jazz.
Owen Wilson jazz. Jazz, not something else.
It kind of sounds like Kermit singing along with the saxophone.
Yeah, he does have a Kermit-like voice, doesn't he? I like Owen Wilson a lot. I don't hear no ill will.
Hey, guys. Hi, hello there.
Oh, Owen, is that you? I didn't even realize you're here.
It's Owen Wilson the Frog.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect. I think you are so much cooler than your brother Luke. I feel like Luke is overrated.
Yeah. Miss Piggy thinks so, too.
Oh, wrong.
That's so nice of you to stop in. Oh, Dave, did you see Owen Wilson? He just stopped in like a second ago. I think you went to go get like a beer or something.
Yeah, I did. I thought I heard like some weird nostril breathing.
Yeah, that was Owen Wilson.
Yeah. I figured as much. Sounds like a broken sideways nose, if I've ever heard
one. Yeah. He was here. He only had nice things to say about you. So, you know. You didn't come up in conversation.
Not that jerk.
He was like, you should get a co-host sometime, Billy. I was like, I have a co-host. It's Dave. He's like, I always walk away during those parts.
Oh, man.
You're like, I know Owen Wilson did not say that, Billy.
Yeah, but it still hurts. It still hurts.
Oh, man. So, my mind is blank for comp. Oh, well, first off, David Bowie passed away this week.
Yeah.
And while, both of us are big fans of him, both his music and his movies. And while he didn't have like a direct effect on comic books per se, I was going to say he did influence James Robinson's run on Starman.
Before that, the blue alien Mikhail Tomas, who he showed up in a first issue special in the 70s,
yeah,
was directly influenced by David Bowie's Starman song.
I didn't realize those two were connected until James Robinson like mentioned it in an issue of Starman.
No, they were always connected.
That's fascinating.
And like that character didn't really go anywhere. They were like, oh, it'd be cool, because they already had the Starman character. Ted
Wright
had appeared previously in the, you know, 1930s and 40s, and there was another one-off Starman character in 1951 that showed up, and then they were like, let's revive this concept, you know, much like they did with, you know, the Flash and Green Lantern and the Silver Age. But this was in the Bronze Age, and they did that influenced by David Bowie's Starman song, and it didn't quite have the legs it had in music until James Robinson got a hold of it in the late 90s, well, mid to late 90s Starman series.
Yeah, it was specifically Starman number 28 from 1997 by James Robinson and Craig Hamilton. That's the issue where Mikhail is talking about his past, and he says, I'll make my heart to think in, there was a song, a man named Bowie sang it. The song's name, My Blue Skin, people call me what they do because of that song. They call me Starman. Even if he was directly influenced by the Starman song, James Robinson like overtly, you know, like let people know about it.
Right. Which is cool, like tying a little bit of history in with the comics. So.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Dave Bowie would definitely be missed. And but as for comic book news, we got a bunch of things this week, right? I feel like the news cycle really started up. It was kind of dead, like leading up to the new year.
Yeah, it was. I don't think there was much much that was going out, just because people were, you know, wrapped up in their own lives and their loved ones and friends and, you know, what you do in the holidays.
Right. Yeah. A lot of offices closed between Christmas and New Year's. So no offices being open, no press releases being sent out.
That is true.
So let me see. So what give me something, Dave.
All right. All right. So John Barrowman is writing a digital first series for DC Comics titled Arrow, the Dark Archer. And the Dark Archer character on Arrow is Malcolm Merlyn. And if, even if you're not familiar with the show, you know Merlyn as like the evil Arrow welding character in DC Comics.
Yeah, he has a great like little arc in Identity Crisis. I feel like that that limited series really put him out there as a villain.
Yeah, he was just kind of like a background, like, you know, almost like a joke. You know, like sometimes you could, I think similar to Catman, who was in who's now in Secret Six, and Gail Simone had an awesome take on him. But a lot of times, you know, people are like, you know, you could find a character and it's it could just seem like a joke, like, oh, this is the bad Green Arrow and he's wears black, like it sounds goofy until someone has the right spin on it, you know. And I think Identity Crisis really did have a great spin on it, and I think the Arrow show really, you know, has put a lot of depth into the character. And so he said, John Barrowman, that is, he said, my sister and I are both comic fans, and a couple years ago we came across a description of a team of DC superheroes from the 1950s that have been lost to history. We came up with a story to update them into a contemporary series. I went to Jeff Johns, the creative officer at DC Comics, and pitched the idea to his team. While we were chatting, I mentioned Carol and I would love to write Malcolm's backstory too. Jeff knew Carol and I had written a number of things together. After we got the go-ahead from Jeff, we did we researched what was already been written about Malcolm Merlyn. And I don't think there, and I think he went on to say that there wasn't like a lot that had been written, because it just kind of like what we were saying. So yeah, I think that's really cool. And I think him and his sister write Jack Harkness novels
together. I thought you were going to say like fan fiction.
No. When we saw him speak, I think that's what he was talking about. Like he's written a couple of Captain Jack novels.
Oh, that's really cool. Now, what do you think this team that's lost to history is?
I'm definitely thinking Challengers of the Unknown.
Interesting. I was trying to figure it out, and the best I come up with was Sugar and Spike, and you're like, well, Keith Giffen's already doing that.
I really feel like it might be because the last time that series they did a series with those characters was the late 90s, and I think it was Alan Grant, and it was right around the time they relaunched the Fate series into Book of Fate. They had Scare Tactics and another run of Marv Wolfman's his horror series. I forget the name, but Baron Winters is right. Night Force. So they were, that was like their like weird line from DC Comics at that time. And it was a pretty cool idea, you know. I think Alan Grant said it was initially like pitched as a TV series, kind of like an X-Files-ish type take on the Challengers. And since then, we haven't really seen too much from them. And so that's my guess.
Yeah, my guess is Seven Soldiers of Victory, only because of the Green Arrow connection. And I know that, you know, Grant Morrison obviously did something with Seven Soldiers just in this past decade. But it's a team like, well, his Seven Soldiers was very different than the classic Seven Soldiers.
Yeah, I would go against the Seven Soldiers because I think they came out in like the 30s.
Okay.
Or the 40s.
I guess we're going to find out. I think you're probably right.
I hope that series actually happens, and I'm looking forward to him writing this Malcolm Merlyn series because, you know, I mean, who knows the character better? I was thinking, you know, I don't think anybody, you know, like I don't think any writer has spent that much time with that character as John Barrowman has.
Yeah, that's a good actor, point.
You know, except maybe some of the writers of Arrow, and but no comics writer, you know. And I was thinking, and that's what made me think about his Captain Jack novels. And I was like, I'm surprised that more actors don't do that, you know, don't write some of their characters that they play. You know, but, you know, not all actors might be talented writers, I guess.
That's a good point.
So good on you,
John
Barrowman.
And DC Comics. So this is going to be a digital first series, right? This will be coming out of Comixology first, then possibly in print if it sells well.
Yeah, usually they do like they do like 3 issues weekly, right. And then like at the end of that month, they put collected. Out a print. It's collected and put out in print as one issue.
Right. I actually am really excited for that, even though I'm nowhere near caught up on Arrow. Like woefully behind. But speaking of shows that have come out of Arrow, DC's Legends of Tomorrow is getting a big marketing push. And the first episode of that is going to be next week.
Oh, it's next week. Oh, I thought we had 2 more weeks.
No, it's next Thursday. It's starting on the 21st of January. And awesome. I know that because it has been advertised at like every New York City subway station I've been to, like giant ads for it that has every character. You know, you've got Heatwave, Captain Cold, the Atom, what looks like both halves of Firestorm. It looks like the young guy and the Professor Stein, both Hawks, and a guy with a glowing like a six shooter that's also glowing with energy. So I'm guessing that's Rip Hunter. And then there's a woman who is that White Canary. I don't know who she is.
Yes, in the Arrow series, she's Black Canary's sister, Sarah, and she has recently been resurrected in the Lazarus Pit.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, and they've got like icons for all of them on the next to the show logo. But and besides that, like, it's been getting an interesting marketing push. So if you're somebody who uses the like Map My Fitness app, which has been bought by Under Armour, DC's Legends of Tomorrow has a fitness challenge in it where you can win prizes.
That's cool.
I just want to pull it up real quick just to get the details of it.
And so, if anyone goes to their, go ahead.
So there are 56,000 people are participating in it right now. It ends February 5th. It's called the CW's Becoming a Legend Challenge. And basically you log workouts and you can win different prizes, including a $500 Under Armour gift card.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So if you use and Matt My Fitness is a free app, anybody can download it to their phone and use it.
Wow, that's awesome. I know if you go to their Twitter page, they have a bunch of trailers, character specific, that are pretty awesome.
That's cool. Gotta check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I just want to keep it on TV for a minute. And you were telling me that Titans is dead at TNT.
Yeah. So no more Titans, which I'm okay about.
Oh, interesting. I'm really bummed about it. Like I was really looking forward to this becoming a thing.
I am enjoying Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
I like what they did with Vixen, who I guess is also coming to, I think it's Arrow.
Yeah.
The person who did the voice acting is now going to be play her in live action.
Oh, nice.
And I'm enjoying Flash, and I'm enjoying their take on Supergirl, and Gotham is okay.
Gotham is terrible.
Okay, I was being favorable to, you know, just not crapping on Gotham, and
I'm crapping on Gotham.
Yeah. So and I just I don't know. So they have the Titans here, and I'm like, oh, well, I guess that could be good. But, like, if it's not, like, Berlanti, Kreisberg, and Guggenheim, I'm like, I don't know if I trust you. I mean, if it's good, I would definitely watch it, but I don't know. I don't know. So
yeah, no,
I feel like if it's not going to be on par with those series, then I don't really want it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. But DC's done such a great job. Well, Warner Bros. Has done such a great job with Teen Titans TV shows. Granted, they're all animated, and I could see why you would need like a huge budget for a Teen Titans show. But I guess the same is true for DC's Legends of Tomorrow. You know, you've got a cold guy, you've got a heat guy, you've got some flying people, time travel.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it'll probably be cool, but you know, if some of those characters get to show up now on Flash or Arrow because they're no longer in development for TNT, I think I'm more excited about that.
Yeah, it would be cool to see some Titans characters on Flash, most definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And in comics news, Superman, Lois and Clark, which we both read the first issue of and really, really enjoyed. It's only an 8-issue series.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I thought it was going to be an ongoing.
Me too. And
a lot of ongoings at DC barely get to 8 issues these days.
Well, you know, I was wondering because, you know, a lot of the series stop at 8 issues. Mm-hmm. Of the past new series. I was like, I wonder if they're all like internally billed as mini series. So like, it's like, okay, you write 8 issues of this story that you want to tell. And then, you know, if it does awesome, you know, you got an ongoing. Like, because that's about what Dr. Fate's arc here is. It's about 8 issues, you know? And if, you know, it ended up that wasn't selling well, I'm sure it would have been announced that it was a miniseries.
Right.
And so I think that's why you get those 8-issue to 6-issue runs for like things like Telos and, you know, or Telos. Or I forget how we figured out how it was pronounced. Telos.
Yeah.
who cares? It's canceled.
yeah, that's also a limited series.
Yeah, it is a limited series, but that's what I mean. Like, I think if that took off, like, it wouldn't be a limited series.
Right, of course. And that, well, that's true going back to even like when the Transformers first debuted at Marvel, that was supposed to be a 4-issue limited series. And then when issue number 5 came out, and it was great because Marvel used to do like number 1 of a 4-issue limited series, number 2 of a 4-issue limited series. And then when number 5 came out, it said number 5 of a 4-issue limited series.
Right.
Yeah. So they were there having fun with it, and they took that off. But though, when the final issue, I believe number 80 came out, it said number 80 in a 4-issue limited series.
That's pretty funny. That's really funny. Yeah. So I think it's smart in a way that like now those books have a beginning and an end, and it's not like they're like, oh, you cut me off. I had a story to tell. You know, it's like you get 6 issues.
Yeah,
tell a good story in 6 issues. If you prove yourself, if the fans like it, etc., you'll get more. So I'm guessing Superman Lois and Clark isn't, you know, selling crazy, or at least in comparison to other Superman books, which just goes to show you that Superman that everybody is missing, nobody's really missing.
Yeah, and it's tough because it's like, okay, this is the Superman you're missing, but he's in a kind of odd costume, and now he and Lois have a kid, and they're existing in like the new 52 world. I think when people say they're missing the pre-52 Superman, they want that Superman, like in the main title, you know, having ongoing Superman adventures,
right.
Not sneaking around as like Superman B. Like he's sneaking around like he's JV squad Superman.
Right. So I'd agree with you there. Like if this was a Flashpoint, a pre-Flashpoint set Superman series, or excuse me, if it was set on like a pre-Flashpoint world,
like
going on right now.
Yeah, like the Adventures of Superman comic that was like continuity free and he's in the trunks.
Right. Or like, you know, like Earth 2, like if it was set on a parallel universe where you're like, oh, that universe still exists. We just don't get a lot of stories from them. I think that probably would sell better. You're right.
Oh, totally. I think DC would be afraid of that selling better, too.
I think so, too.
Like this way, they could say, oh, we tried doing pre-Flashpoint stuff and it didn't work, even though it's not really the pre-Flashpoint stuff that people want.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. And the last bit of news is that Marvel made a video, you could find it on YouTube, and probably their site, that since Secret Wars has taken so long and there were scheduling issues and there's more issues of Secret Wars than there were supposed to be, they have a recap video. So if you're like, I don't even remember everything I've read for this past year and these past like... 9 or 8 issues that I've read, and we're going on to our 9th. Like, you could just get a quick recap on their page before you read the last issue.
Yeah, like in Marvel Unlimited, the Marvel like version of Netflix that's available for, you know, iPad and Android, it usually runs 6 months behind the publication of Marvel Comics. There's a lot of Secret Wars miniseries that are complete on there already before this, before it, like the tie-ins. That are available there for free to read before the final issue of Secret Wars even came out. I think the first 4 issues of the main Secret Wars title can be read there right now.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's like, wow. And I was really into the Secret Wars miniseries and was like picking up a lot of the tie-ins. But then when the series started taking longer to be produced, I kind of fell off many of them. And thank goodness for this Marvel Digital Unlimited app. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. It is great.
I've said many times, but yeah, that video is a good idea. I feel like anybody who's excited for the final issue of Secret Wars has been reading the first 8 issues.
Yeah, I think so too. But I watched it and I was like, oh, that's a good recap. Cause like, I know what happened, but it's not like fresh in my memory.
Yeah. The thing that really stood out for me for Secret Wars, the final issue, is that Hickman went out of his way, where Riddick went out of his way to draw the Maestro jumping off that helicarrier as it went down, you know, even just as a dot dropping off it. So I expect the Maestro is going to play some role in the finale of this series.
I think you might be right. Speaking of which, what's in your 20, Billy?
Well, believe it or not, Secret Wars number 9 is. I'm really, and basically just because I want to know what is going on with the Maestro. Like, I need to find out. I'm willing to pay the extra dollar. I loathe paying $5 for a comic book that's not named Copra by Michel Fife. Like, that I'll pay $5 for gladly. But for a Marvel or DC book, I really hate paying $5 for it. And I actually am willing to pay that extra dollar just to find out what happened to the Maestro after he jumped off that helicarrier towards the end of the last issue.
Yes, I agree. It is billed only as Genesis in the solicitations.
I'm guessing is not a reference to Apocalypse's son from the mid-90s, or no, Cable's son from the mid-90s, who became like a devotee of Apocalypse and went so far to dress up as Apocalypse. He also had long blonde hair, because you know, the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
The 90s in comic books.
Of course.
Yeah. So also on my list is Squadron Supreme number 3 by James Robinson and Leonard Kirk. This is our 3rd issue in 6 weeks. I'm really liking the double ship of this series so far. I'm wondering how long they can actually keep this pace up, especially if, like, you know, Leonard Kirk's going to need to take a few issues off if they're going to double ship the series. But the first 2 issues were so good. I'm like, yeah, just give me more. I'll take this every other week.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they do something cool with it where, you know, James Robinson, when he was doing Starman, was really smart in how he used his artists, because Tony Harris, especially at that time, was not very quick. So, like, he needed, you know, some lead time to get some issues out. So he would do older issues older stories called Times Past, and he would use other artists to do fill-ins. And hopefully we get like an arc with all Leonard Kirk, and then we get this arc that's like a different kind of storyline, and it's, you know, another artist, you know. Because if not, I just want Leonard Kark there.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping we get Times Past stories that are in that vein here, like of these characters on their previous worlds. I definitely want to see like what transformed Power Princess from, because she's the member of the original 80s Squadron Supreme that's in this book. Now, mm-hmm. And what's changed her from that like very 1980s outfit she had to a much more alien look that she's sporting in this series? Like, right. I was surprised when they were showing like who they were on their previous planets, that she was the one from the 80s series. But yeah, so, and I do love that this issue is titled Squad Goals. Just because I see that hashtag online all the time, it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see how this goes down with Uncanny Avengers.
Yeah, yeah. I am glad that like we're getting an Uncanny Avengers battle in here, but I don't have to buy Uncanny Avengers to see like how it ends.
I'm glad too that like James Robinson isn't dangling it out, you know, like 10 issues down the line, and the Uncanny Avengers are coming after them. They'll find them soon, you know, and you're like, all right, well, they're all around the globe. How hard is it going to be to find them? They're not hiding, you know, in some respects, you know?
Right. Totally. Going back to the Times Past for a minute. Yeah. I really hope that James Robinson isn't like, oh, I don't want people to think I'm like, you know, this is what I do. I only do stories that look into the past of characters as part, like that's my shtick. Not that that's not the only thing he does, but that's like the thing he does. You know what I mean?
Right. I think, yeah, well, it's kind of funny where you that's like a shtick, but like it's not in
right
respects, because you know, you look at any character and anything in the past of their lives is gonna inform what is happening in the present. So like any flashbacks you have, I think are needed sometimes. Mm. And that he just has like a, you know,
a phrase for it.
Yes, exactly.
I hope he calls them Times Past just to stick it to DC Comics.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty funny.
Yeah, we don't know how things end. Well, we don't know the details of how he left DC Comics, but I get the feeling that it was not, you know, amicable.
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah, some stuff is hinted at in Airboy, but like, you know, he's been very good about not airing his grievances with DC Comics in public and, mm-hmm. and you know, not burning bridges with them, at least publicly.
Yeah.
So also on my list is Birthright number 13 by Joshua Williamson and Andre Brezin and Adriano Lucas. We had read the first two volumes of this, and I kind of want to just jump in. I might like not pick up this issue and hold for the next trade, just because the series does read so seamlessly in trade.
Yeah, and it's such a breeze of a read that like I feel like if I read it in single issues, I might be like, that was it.
Yeah, right, and like forget what happened.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. But it made my 20 for this week. Just also to give a spotlight to it, if people aren't familiar with Birthright, it's basically about this suburban kid who kind of gets like Narnia'd into this like fantasy world, and then returns home, but time has moved much more slowly on Earth than in the fantasy world. So he's an adult now, and he's also turned into like Conan the Barbarian. And then there's a really good twist towards the end that I don't want to spoil for new readers. If you do want it spoiled, feel free to just listen to the podcast where we covered Birthright, and you could just search for that on TuesdayNightMovies.com. And then next up is, so far I've spent $5, $4, and $3. And unfortunately, there are no $2 comics, so I have to jump back to $4 and pick up Rebels number 10, written by Brian Wood, art by Tristan Jones. This is that Dark Horse series that takes place during the Revolutionary War. This issue is a one-and-done story about a British soldier, but the rest of the series has been all about, you know, the American side. This is, if you haven't read the series at all, this is a great jumping on point, because it It's just a single issue story, and it's from the point of view of not one of the regular characters.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. I've kind of lost track of the series a little bit. I might grab a trade of it and start rereading it because it was really, really good.
Yeah. And then finally, I've got All New Hawkeye number 3 by Jeff Lemire and Ramon Perez. I'm behind on this series, but I really want to read about Clint and his brother Barney, who goes by Trickshot. I really enjoyed how they got along in the Matt Fraction series. So like, to the point that I would pick up this issue, even though I haven't. Actually, I'm pretty far behind on the Lemire written Hawkeye series.
Yeah, you should pick up the old stuff, or at least read it in Marvel Unlimited, because they really go into their relationship as kids.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I remember the first issue touching on that, and then, yeah, I haven't read past there.
Yeah, it kind of he kind of like mirrors a little bit like him and his brother, and then him and Kate.
Oh, interesting. So that's like
relationships, and not mirrors, but maybe compares and contrasts is a better way to say that.
It's amazing that Barney is like, you know, the F up brother, just because Clint always seems like he can't get his stuff together.
Right.
Yeah. So that's my 20, exactly $20.
Awesome.
What about you?
Well, like you, I'm picking up Secret Wars, Squadron Supreme, and All New Hawkeye. And I'm also picking up Scarlet Witch number 2 by James Robinson and Vanessa Del Rey. I love the first issue. You were like kind of so-so on it, but you, I think I am fairly new to like the Scarlet Witch's character.
That's true.
In that, like, I've watched her and read her stories in teams, but I haven't read like solo stuff with her, and I feel like you have like an idea in your head of who you think she is.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
And I don't think James Robinson hit that for you.
He did not. Yeah, the first issue, I was really looking forward to this, but it left me wanting not more. It just left me wanting. And it's too bad because I loved James Robinson's writing. I loved Starman. I loved Earth 2. I loved Airboy. I'm loving Squadron Supreme. And this, it just didn't click for me.
Yeah, that's a bummer. And I really loved it. And I liked the Uncanny Avengers annual that was like the prequel to this, you know.
Right.
Yeah, the first issue I felt like was a great introduction to the character and the story, and I'm really excited to read the second issue. I'm also picking up Extraordinary X-Men number 5 by Jeff Lemire and Humberto Ramos, and I've been really enjoying this series. It has a fairly classic X-Men lineup, except, you know, kind of a little bit mixed with Old Man Logan and Teenage Jean Grey. They're fighting Mr. Sinister, and it's just been a blast. So and these are all my favorite writers right now, you know, like Jeff Lemire, Jonathan Hickman, James Robinson, and they're all Marvel books. So like I don't know if we have ever had a week in the past 2 years where I'm like, it's all Marvel.
Yeah, definitely not for you. Like, you are traditionally the DC guy on this podcast, and I'm like the Marvel guy.
Yeah, and I'm like, shut up and take my money, Marvel.
And usually, you know, you're like, well, I'm paying money for this Marvel Unlimited app. That's like a reason for me not to pick up Marvel books. But man, you are making yours Marvel this week.
I am, and I think it's just how the schedules fall. Like, usually, like, my favorite writers, I'll be like, okay, I want to like purchase a book, so I'll have it, and I could go and reread it, and
you don't want to wait six months to see it in Marvel Unlimited.
Right, and there's other stuff I do wait for, and these guys I don't want to wait for, and they all have lined up this week for a lot of money.
Yeah, it's funny because you know you mentioned in the past that you will when the list of new books for the week are coming out, you will first search for the writers that you like Jeff Lemire and James Robinson and Jonathan Hickman. And yeah, like you did your search and you're like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah, you know, I scanned through DC's books and, you know, Earth 2 is out this week and I'm saving that to so it can drop to $1.99. You know, if DC had a Marvel Unlimited type app, it would be waiting. I'd be waiting for that, you know.
Yeah, I'm amazed that DC, like I remember Image was talking about it and then I don't think anything's gone anywhere with it. But I'm amazed that more companies haven't jumped on this because Marvel Unlimited is definitely successful.
Yeah, I'm shocked as well.
So that's our picks for this week. If you're heading to the comic book store, you know those are the books that we think should deserve your attention and your dollars. And I know it's hard one because of the price of comics these days to stick to a $20 budget. And it's also hard to like give new books a try. So these are the books that we're saying, hey, you know, give them a try. Especially Rebels. I feel like Rebels is a very underrated series.
Yes, I agree.
So this week on the Tuesday Night Comics Book Club, we're reading Batman Death by Design by Chip Kidd and Dave Taylor. Dave, what did you think of this book?
I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it too. I thought it reminded me of the Batman the Animated Series, like just the way the story played out.
I definitely got vibes of Batman the Animated Series, how he drew the Joker somewhat reminded me of the actor who inspired the Joker.
Oh, interesting. I wonder if that was on purpose then.
Just like facial structure and stuff like that.
Right.
Some of the, how it really looked like people were wearing the clothing that they were in, and Batman did too, reminded me of the Batman 66 series. But it was so simple, you know, like everything was very simple and understandable, but at the same time complex. And I think it just shows what a great writer and artist and visual communicator Chip Kidd is, as well as Dave Taylor here. Man, it also reminded me of Devil in the White City. Did you read that book?
I did read that book. The serial killer at the Chicago World's Fair.
Right. And it had that like real world feel to it. And I think much because they took the inspiration from things that happened in New York, some disasters that happened in New York. So it all was like just a great series. Great book.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that Chip Kidd noted it in his introduction that it basically he combined the construction of the new Penn Station from the 1960s and the elevator crane accident in Manhattan from I think 2008, and was like, well, what if these occurred around the same time from each other and were connected to each other too? Like I thought that was really cool, a nice plot idea. And like the not the villain of the book, but the one of the side characters, Exacto. His design, like I felt like he could have stepped right out of the Batman the Animated Series cartoon.
Yeah, I agree. And the architect there who ends up getting the son of the architect.
Right.
He is modeled after Chip Kidd.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that. That's interesting.
Anybody who knows what Chip Kidd looks like, you're like, oh, that's Chip Kidd there.
It's funny.
Right down to those glasses.
Yeah, totally. I now that you mention it, like I can picture it because I have met Chip Kidd before and I just did not catch that at all. That's really funny. Yeah, I thought this was a good book. I would recommend this to people. Though out of the books we've read so far in the Tuesday Night Book Club, This was probably my least favorite. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah. I really liked the Black Canary, Zatanna original graphic novel. And I really liked Teen Titans Earth 1. I would put this in third place behind those two.
Oh, wow. You know, I hadn't thought about like where I would put it. Mm-hmm. But all three of those are just great standalone stories.
Oh, definitely. Cost this one was kind of, for me, when the characters were out of costume, some of the men, I like, it took me a little bit to figure out like who that character was, because the union boss and somebody else, like the union boss.
Oh, the union boss and the editor look very similar.
Yes. And so for a while I thought the editor was like corrupt, and I was like, oh wait, no, that's the union boss.
Because right. I did a double take.
On a cigar and be in an office somewhere, and I'm like, wait a second, which office am I looking at?
I also love the use of color in this book.
Yes, that's what I wanted to comment on as well. I like that it was like spot coloring. You know, it was like a black and white comic or a blue and white comic, a black blue and white comic. But then we would get these like hints of orange, and or if it was a black and white page, like a very bright blue.
Right, and they used it to direct your attention to what was going on. So it became a storytelling device as well, and I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I think it was all done in colored pencil, I think.
Yeah, no, that's right. Which I love that look, but it seems jarring to me than when like traditional word balloons are on top of it, which have like that very ink line outlining them.
Yeah, I like... in some series, they take away the black outline now of the word balloon. And
yeah.
And
like a dash.
Or even just like nothing. It's just white on top. Mm. And I think that the word balloon could use some updating in like how it's used with the different media that's now being used in comics. You know, we get, you know, colored pencil, we get painted series, we get you know, the mixed media where you have people doing pencils and then somewhat digital inks and digital coloring to enhance the pencils, but you can kind of still see the pencils behind it. So there's so much stuff that people are doing with the artwork, and not much that's being done with how the word balloons are being incorporated with all the different media that's being used in comics now, that I think that's one place that's lacking in like its incorporation with the comics media.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It just seemed a little jarring to me, like the very traditional looking word balloons on top of this art.
Yeah, I feel the same way when you read like Marvel's or Kingdom Come.
Yeah, that's a good point. For that it didn't seem as jarring, but I could totally see that.
That's always bugged me about like Kingdom Come especially.
So I think both of us would definitely give this a thumbs up and definitely recommend buying it, right?
Yeah, I would totally. And I think it would be great for someone who's not like up to date with like Batman continuity. Like, you don't have to explain who the 80 Robins are,
right?
You know, you don't have to explain like who Batman is. It's like Batman's Bruce Wayne. He's a billionaire, and
Joker's the bad guy,
and it's set in the city.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. It is a very like great one and done story, as was that Black Canary Zatanna OGN. But when I said before, like I could see this being a Batman the Animated Series episode. Like I think this would be perfect for someone who is a fan of that cartoon and then hasn't really read comic books since then.
Right, and I think that's also what you're like, why you're saying Batman the Animated Series, because you can watch any of those episodes and be new to Batman.
Oh, totally.
And it doesn't lessen someone who is very aware of Batman and his continuity. It doesn't lessen their enjoyment.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what helped make that series so perfect.
Yeah.
You know, definitely walking that fine line between like this is great for old fans and new fans. I feel like a lot of times, say like with the New 52, it's hard to walk that line.
It is. I agree.
Yeah.
So, what else did you read this week?
I've just been like, I ignore one of my favorite comic books, Contest of Champions, had a new issue this week, and I didn't even pick it up. I have just been like reading Hickman's Fantastic Four run, and I'm at the point where Fantastic Four is running side by side with FF, and I'm just loving it. Like, you know, Spider-Man and the Human Torch have just moved in together. The Human Torch is alive again. And it is, people write into the letters page saying how this is the best Fantastic Four run since John Byrne's run. I might have to read John Byrne's run in Marvel Unlimited. I remember reading a lot of it when I was growing up in the 80s. I think this is better than John Byrne's run.
Yeah, I would agree with you about how you're reading it. Like, when I started reading it and I got into it, I just didn't want to read anything else.
Yeah, like I finish it and I just like go right into the next issue. And what I tend to do is, since you can download up to 12 issues for offline reading onto Marvel Unlimited, I just download like 12 issues, and that way I don't have to worry about like being in a Wi-Fi location or, you know, even having to like load the issue. Like, I don't want to wait. I want them all to be there and just like to gorge on them when I can.
Right. Yeah, it's a great, great run. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah, like I rarely take my iPad out on the New York City subway, and I've been so into this that I'm like, I don't care. Like, I've got, you know, a 5-minute subway ride in the morning to my office, and I'm like, I can read half an issue. I was like, train's running late, no problem.
Yeah, and the art is pretty awesome all the way through.
Yeah, switching off between Steve Epting and Nick Dragota, I'm like, oh man.
Right, and it starts off with Dale Eaglesham, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think you got a solid art team all the way through with that book. And obviously great writing. Yeah, if anybody, you know, is looking for a good long series to read, you know, check out Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four.
And it's amazing how he set up like his Avengers stuff and Secret Wars in this. Like, Galactus gives Reed the arc that saves the 616 heroes at the beginning of Secret Wars.
Hmm.
Yeah, like that's the boat that Galactus gives him. And you think it's going to have something to do with like dealing with the Council of Reeds or dealing with the Mad Celestials, but it ends up being like that saved them when the universe imploded.
Hmm.
And, you know,
I didn't even pick up on that.
Like, you wouldn't remember it because it's just some spaceship that that Galactus gives him, but it's called the Ark, and it's, and, you know, it's the Ark in Secret Wars too.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I do love that, you know, this makes the thing Franklin / Galactus fight in Secret Wars so much more poignant, because here adult Franklin and Galactus, like, it's revealed that, you know, they're gonna merge one day in the far, far future.
Yeah.
So like having Franklin controlling, you know, his pet Galactus in Secret Wars, I thought was a great nod to that run in FF.
Yeah, I don't think Hickman is doing much Marvel-wise after Secret Wars, and I think it's a great, you know, ending story for him.
Yeah, because I don't know if he's written anything that's in the all newest Marvel now. I don't know what they're calling it these days.
He has not. He has not.
So, well, you know, it's like, hey, you can't make a new series until Secret Wars finishes. I understand that.
Right.
But that will be interesting to see if he is taking a break. Yeah. But yeah, so that's what I'm loving. And like, there are no other comics besides this. Like, I had to put down Fantastic Four to read Batman Death by Design. I was like, oh, right, I'd have to read this for today.
That's funny.
Like, I just kept putting it off all week.
So, for me, I read, I've only read like back, I didn't read any new issues either. I read a recently reduced Green Arrow number 46. And there's this like really kind of cool Black Canary appearance. So it's like almost like an unofficial crossover with Green Arrow, where her band shows up on the radio as Green Arrow and Tarantula are driving, are on a road trip together. And he's like, ugh, I can't stand this band.
Oh man, that's messed up.
And I was like, oh wow, that's pretty awesome. And I was like, I wonder if 52 Black Canary and or New 52 Black Canary and Green Arrow are going to ever meet and get together.
Yeah, and that was, you know, going back to a book we'd read a couple of weeks ago, that Zatanna Black Canary crossover, you know, featured Black Canary and Green Arrow together as a couple for a couple of pages. And all I thought was like, oh, I miss them as a couple.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're not the most perfect couple, but they're like adorable in their dysfunction.
Yes, I agree. I also read Chrononauts Volume 1 by Mark Millar and Sean Murphy.
This is an Image book, right?
It is. And the art's awesome. Like, I love Sean Murphy.
Yeah, me too.
But the story...
Really?
I was really bummed because, like, I've been enjoying Huck, and I was like, oh man, maybe Mark Millar is a little bit different. And like, there was an Image sale, and I bought a bunch of Mark Millar stuff to read, and I was like, oh, maybe, you know, he's kind of like not being like
the grown up
badass Mark Millar, you know, like, what if heroes were real? And so like,
what if comics written by Maxim writers?
Right. But in that way, like, this is a classic Mark Millar story, and it poses the question if real people were put into like a genre situation, you know. And by real, I mean
jerks.
Right. So like, what if jerks were put into a genre situation? And so basically a couple self-centered jerks are the first time travelers. And there's a couple of cool things here where like time traveling is now like a part of like NASA and stuff like that, but they're just like kind of like rock stars and jerks. And so when they go on their first time travel mission, it kind of gets wonky because they decide to do whatever they want to do and create like a kingdom for themselves. So like, you know, they're doing like what you would do if you're like, in my wildest fantasy, if I had time travel ability, I would then go here, and then I would get the script for Breaking Bad, and I would be the writer for Breaking Bad, and then I would get all the coolest cars and bring them to me, and then I would just be the coolest guy ever, and I would have a kingdom, and I would be just the coolest of cool, and I would sleep with all the cool girls, like Marilyn Monroe and every hot girl that ever lived. And then, you know, like, that's kind of like, that's like what I'm saying right now. This is the story. But, you know, as much as like,
that sounds like it's written by a 14-year-old.
It reads like that because as much as you're like, you know, Mark Miller's like, this is real, because this is what a real person would do if they got that power.
Right.
Like, they would not question for a second, like, how they could destroy themselves, and like, by doing all of this, they can never exist. Like, that never even once comes up in the series, you know.
But like, I think that's fine if they then do destroy themselves inadvertently.
Right, like that would be the most real situation that could happen from the series. But the only real thing in the series is that, like, is this idea that people are jerks. And if you want to believe that's real and that's what people would do and they wouldn't think about consequences, you know, that's pretty sad.
Yeah, and if you do want to do that, then go watch Back to the Future too, because that's what Marty does, and that's what gets him into all the trouble when he brings back the you know, the sports almanac from the future.
Right. Well, yes, this is basically if like two Biff Tannens went back and like, you know, like, and I guess, you know, that would be some people, but that's a pretty sad look on the human race. And,
yeah.
You know, and that's, I think that's the, when comics get real, I think there's two sad pieces to that. Especially when you talk about like genre fiction, like we are, like, you know, especially superheroes, I think are meant to show like, you know, like the best we can be, you know.
Yeah, the potential.
Right. And if not, they're tales of what not to do. And like, you know, like they're a tale to learn from. And
or they're tales of like striving to do the right thing.
Right. And if you think this is what like a real human would do, like take away like, you know, the best humans who become superheroes in these fictional stories. But if you think a real human would go back and like destroy the potential for him to maybe not live or just screw up the timeline just so he could be the coolest person in the world, like, you know, I think you got a small portion of humanity pegged, but yeah. That's a sad look on the world.
And I think that would say more about you than it would about, you know, everyone else.
I agree.
Yeah. I do feel like a lot of Mark Miller comics are written like for and by like a 14-year-old's like boy's power fantasy. Like back when I was like 14 and I was like, oh, if I had superpowers, then you know, the cutest girl in school would pay attention to me and acknowledge my existence. And that is an actual thought that I had. Mark Miller seems to be making a career out of it, though.
And he's like, and Billy, it's true.
Yeah. I was like, wait a second, I recognize this.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a bummer. I read Fate number 13, and I just want to just run you down the list of characters in this book right now. It's Blaze, Nebrios, Necron, and Sentinel, and Fate, obviously, which is like, you know, weird, obscure DC magic dark based characters, you know.
Yeah.
Which is like right up my alley, and I'm like, yes, I'm loving this. But it's also like it had the best worst line of the Fate comic series so far, and it was like, he's like, if you think that'll kill me, he's like, you must be joking, because you haven't had my wife's cooking, my ex-wife's cooking. And I was like, oh boy.
Any young man as a superhero.
Yeah. So there's still that element of Fate where you're like, oh boy.
Hi-o.
Here we go. Being edgy with that Fate knife of yours and that comic wit. So, you know, it was enjoyable.
It was enjoyable and, you know, like, SMHing at the same time.
And the last thing I read was Adventures of Superman Volume 1, and this is the digital first comic series.
Okay.
And they had a sale on these guys this past week. And
nice.
I picked it up, and it's I think it's like 6 or 7 print issues of the series, which, you know, multiply that by 3 and you get how many digital issues are in this series. And each digital issue is its own story, so like there's about a third of a comic has space for a story. And what really struck me about the series is that it's more than I thought it was. It's not just Superman tales anytime in continuity.
Okay.
It's like Superman, the idea of Superman, you know.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
There were stories about kids pretending to be Superman in this series, like, you know, real life stories, and that were really cool. And that was that actual story was done by Jeff Lemire, and not surprisingly, that hit me close to home. You know, A, because I have done that as a child, and B, because Jeff Lemire is one of my favorite writers, and he was also the artist in this tale. So like, it's really cool. The one thing that I don't like about the series is that collected is like, it's a lot of short stories altogether, like a ton, you know. And they all kind of, because they're all like a third of a comic, they're all paced rather similarly, because you can't do much
right.
But that kind of pacing in that amount of space. But it's definitely like, if it's ever on sale again, I would definitely suggest people pick it up. And because there's really some great nuggets in there, and there's top creators, and, you know, like the Jeff Lemire was the one that like really like grabbed me, But you know, there's a great story by Jeff Parker. There was Joshua Hale Fialkov was in there. I think like in the Batman one, Damon Lindelof did a story. So there's just so many different stories that are written by so many different creators. You know, like I just finished one with J.H. Williams.
And you bought the, what did you buy? The Adventures of Superman Volume 1, the collected version of it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Part of that like DC series starter sale that they were doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Yeah.
They have books like this for Batman, which is Legends of the Dark Knight. And then I think Wonder Woman was Sensation Comics. I think that's that series is still going on. But yeah, I would suggest people check these out. Even if you go onto Comixology and handpick like your favorite creators from the series. And my hope is that as the series goes along, you know, they'll extend, you know, some arcs and make, you know, like vary the length of the stories just to give, you know, so it's just not like pop, 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 pop. That's kind of the feeling I get when I read it. So.
Yeah. These books, like as far as anthologies go, have been, highly praised, especially the Adventures of Superman one.
Yeah. So, definitely grab that, guys. If, whatever's on sale again, or if you want to handpick it, or if you want to spend full price, go ahead and spend full price.
Yeah, because it's not even that expensive. Full price, only $12 on Comixology.
Right. I think I spent like seven-ish.
I almost picked up the Deathstroke Volume 1 Gods of War in that same sale because I wanted to read the first few issues of the New 52 Deathstroke before Liefeld came on. Like they looked really cool.
I would definitely want to pick that up too, because is that the series with Kyle Higgins?
Yes. And so I was looking forward to reading those, and then it turns out that actually Deathstroke Volume 1 was like the Tony Daniel Deathstroke that after
there was the second series, right?
Yeah, and I was like, oh, you almost tricked me, DC. I would have been so pissed off, like if I just bought it and then like check those creator credits.
Yeah,
because the Kyle Higgins series like sounded really cool. I really like the character design was very different than what Deathstroke was. You know what I was used to, it was much more armored, but I really liked it. Like it had a very 1980s Simon Bisley like kind of flair to it, and I was excited to read those, and yeah, DC almost tricked me.
That's funny. That's really funny. Yeah, so
you picked up Avengers of Superman instead of getting Lobo Volume 1 starring like the new Twilight Lobo. Huh, why, Dave?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I shouldn't make fun of it too much. Fantastic Four the movie turned out to be pretty good, so maybe I should wait until I read it.
This is true.
Yeah.
But the visual isn't there for Lobo.
Yeah. Did you read anything else this week?
No, that was it.
Yeah. So next week for the Tuesday night comics book club, we decided we're going to be reading All-Star Batman and Robin Volume 1, which covers issues 1-9. I also bought number 10 if we want to just read the whole series.
Yeah, let's read the whole series.
Yeah. So we're going to be, if you bought them individually, we're going to be reading the whole series 1-10. If you have the hardcover that was released, that covers the first 9 issues. Well, we'll be reading those, and we'll be reading the 10th issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So I'm excited for that.
We should put this on our like Facebook posts and like, you know,
yes.
So like people, like even if they don't get a chance to listen to this episode, maybe they'll be able to like tune in.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that both on the Tuesday Night Movies page and also my own personal Facebook page, too.
Awesome.
Cool. So, Dave, thank you once again. Year 3 continues?
Yes, year 3. Right on board.
And, guys, we will see you next week. And in the meantime, have an awesome Tuesday night and a fantastic new comic book day on Wednesday.
An all-star week ahead, guys. All-star.
I see what you did there.
Did you?
You're the goddamn Dave Tompkins.
God damn it.